and welcome to Colourful Radio. I'm Desiree Jewel Adam, reporting for this special edition program for the UK Africa Investment Summit 2020. This all-important event, which brought together political and business leaders from all over UK and Africa, took place on Monday the 20th of January at the Intercontinental Hotel in South London. According to the British Foreign Policy Group, when John Bolton was President Trump's national security advisor, he argued that Africa would soon be home to a new phase of great power rivalries, with the United States, France, China, and Russia all vying for investment opportunities in the continent. In the first 8 years of the last decade alone, China's top officials made 79 visits to Africa. President Emmanuel Macron of France personally visited the continent 9 times since his election victory in 2017. Vladimir Putin turned on the charm last year in the inaugural Russia-Africa Investment Summit. Enter the UK's first ever Africa Investment Summit of its kind. UK's Prime Minister Boris Johnson sees it as absolutely essential that post-Brexit Britain plays a key investment role in Africa as we shape our post-EU independent foreign policy and cut bespoke trade deals, but also to act as a brake on the worst excesses of the great powers in the region. By 2050, 1 in 4 global consumers will be African. Africa is home to 8 of the 15 fastest growing economies in the world. Yet only 4% of foreign direct investment, FDI, is actually focused on the continent, despite British plans to become the largest G7 investor in Africa by 2022. The Group of Seven is an international intergovernmental economic organization consisting of the 7 largest IMF advanced economies in the world: Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States. At the opening plenary of the summit, Prime Minister Johnson shared his experiences of Africa while he was Foreign Secretary, the vast number of countries he visited, and some fond memories of fun and laughter with the people. He also made a statement on a more serious note that although Africa is definitely the place to do business, the UK has no divine rights to enterprise partnerships, and that there are many other nations competing to invest in the continent.
Good morning, my heads of state, heads of government, business leaders, friends. Good morning to you all, and a very warm welcome to London, to the UK, and to a new start in our business partnership between my country and your countries, and indeed the whole continent of Africa. I am reliably informed that this is the very first time that the UK and quite so many African nations have come together for an event of this kind. And when we celebrate all sorts of exciting new beginnings, start of a new year, a new decade, new government here in Britain, it is an event whose time has come, and indeed an event that is long overdue. An event that I regard as the climax of considerable personal exertions. Because during my 2 years as Foreign Secretary, I visited more African nations than any other senior British politician in living memory. Ghana, the Gambia, Libya, Liberia, Uganda, Nigeria, Cote d'Ivoire, Somalia, Kenya, Egypt, Ethiopia, where in a fit of brilliance, our excellent ambassador decided that I should challenge Haile Gebrselassie to a running race in Addis Ababa at an altitude of 2,355 metres in fierce sunshine over a distance of about a mile. And I had to pretend to have a heart attack in order to get him to slow down. And what everybody said was a very convincing impersonation of a man having a heart attack. And wherever I went in Africa, I found a lot of interest, I'm proud to say, a lot of affection for the UK, even a lot of love. But I also realised that we in the UK had a vital job in continuing to convince people across the continent that we're not just a great friend, an ally, a reliable ally, but also the people you should be doing business with. We have no divine right to that business. This is a competitive world. You have many suitors. Some of you may be off shortly to sample the delights of Davos. But look today at what we have to offer. Look around the world today and you will swiftly see that the UK is not only the obvious partner of choice, we're also very much the partner of today, of tomorrow, and decades.
Whilst making a case for the UK as the investment partner of choice for African countries, the Prime Minister also made note of Africa's growth achievements, as well as how education, talent, innovation, and business collaborations are suited to new partnerships. He also urged attendees and delegates to make the most of the connections and seize the opportunities of the day for the success of all citizens.
More than half the world's fastest growing economies are in Africa. Two-thirds of African economies are expanding faster than the global average. Africa is the future, and the UK has a huge and active role to play in that future. And I hope you agree. Because we are and we will be a partner, your partner, through thick and thin. Our universities are helping to educate the next generation of African entrepreneurs. We're helping to provide securities. I've seen myself in Somalia, South Sudan, the Sahel, and beyond. Our businesses, our investors, our entrepreneurs, our mind-bogglingly innovative financial services sector are helping Africans from Casablanca to Cape Town to face the future with confidence. Today, here in London, here in this fantastic hotel, which I think I gave planning permission for. In the days when I was, a lot of the stuff you see around, I think I helped to build, I'm proud to say. This fantastic city, we are bringing together leaders of nations and businesses, and I hope that this meeting will serve as a great cyclotron of talent in which ideas and people will come together and spark some flash of creativity. And at the start of this new decade, we, the UK and your nations, are taking the first steps on the road to a new partnership between all our people. And like whatever the apparent differences in our skill sets and our abilities and the complementarity, like me and Haile Gebrselassie trundling around the streets of Addis Ababa, we want to be with you side by side every step of the way. So let's seize the opportunities that are before us here today. Let's build the partnership for the future. And together, let us write the next chapter for my country, for your country, and above all, for all the peoples of our countries. Thank you all very much for coming and welcome. Thank you.
Bringing together 21 African countries with UK and African companies, this is the first time governments and businesses from the UK and Africa have come together for an event of this scale. The Prime Minister met 16 African leaders attending the summit, including President Sisi of Egypt, President Kenyatta of Kenya, President Buhari of Nigeria, President Akufo-Addo of Ghana, and President Kagame of Rwanda. He also met African business leaders, including the CEO of Standard Bank, Gert Vogel, and CEO of Investec, Hendrik du Toit, UK business leaders, including the CEO of Vodafone, Nick Reed, CEO of BP, Bernard Looney, CEO of Standard Life, Aberdeen, Keith Skoke, CEO G4S, Ashley Martin Almanza, and the CEO of Associated British Foods, George Weston. Also in attendance was the CEO of London's Stock Exchange Group, David Schwimmer. The Prime Minister also visited the summit's business and innovation hub, where he met young entrepreneurs from the UK and Africa and tried out examples of their creative technology that is improving lives across the world. Also inside the hub, delegates were given access to speak to investment authority delegations from a number of countries, including and not limited to Uganda, Tunisia, South Africa, Sierra Leone, Senegal, Rwanda, and many others.
Hi everyone, I'm in the Innovation Hub here at the UK Africa Investment Summit 2020. There's a number of businesses in the hub, but there's also a number of countries that are represented in the background. I don't think you can see them at this level, but I'm going to try and go around so that we can talk to people and you can see what's going on. This is where you have water cooler conversations. So for example, World Remit is behind, and then I have got... See this? Maybe that's not a good idea. Aha! And you can see Uganda behind me. And then I've got Republic of Tunisia. I've got South Africa. I've also got Sierra Leone. And I have the Republic of Senegal. I have the Republic of Rwanda. And then I have Nigeria and Mozambique. And then behind me, I have Morocco, Mauritius, Malawi, Kenya.
The representatives from these nations took the time to share information on each country's profile pertaining to all the commercial opportunities available. Their fact sheets included data on population and GDP per capita, economic indicators, key markets, and opportunity zones for trade and investment. Now, while the premise around the summit was all about promoting positive investment flows into the continent, there were still questions around how governments ensured all citizens could access the funding, as well as the notion that individuals might view this summit as another scramble to exploit Africa's resources. I had the opportunity to speak to Dr. Moses Ikiara, the Managing Director of the Kenyan Investment Authority team, to find out his thoughts on these concerns.
I'm here with Moses, the Managing Director for the Republic of Kenya, Kenya Investment Authority, and I asked the question around how we ensure that investment actually goes all the way down to every single SME that needs it.
Thank you very much. We are really excited to be attending this first UK-Africa investment summit. It's really exciting, and we are expecting lots of things to come out of this. For us in Kenya, UK is among the top three sources of FDI, and some of the companies there have done a good job in terms of impact. So we are expecting now out of this to get more investments to come there. Regarding your question about making sure that about the missing mineral, there are some companies that are middle level, which are not attractive to the people lending from big tickets, and also too big for people who are doing startups or small companies. I think what I can say is that the financing space is evolving quite a lot, and I've been listening today in terms of the discussions. The fact that actually this missing mineral was not as... It was mentioned by a couple of people, but not necessarily like a major topic. It means there are people who are coming in to close this gap. And what I can say for us at Kenyinvest, we have a database, and we keep improving it all the time, where we take all the people who are investing by giving debt or by giving, you know, issuing equity. And we, when you summarize them, we look at what is the ticket size. They like what type of ticket, what are the terms and the conditions of their engagement, so that we can be able to connect people looking for finance with the people looking to give the finance. So it's an interesting sector where you can see a lot of asymmetry of information. There are a lot of people with a lot of money. They keep saying they don't know where they can get good projects to invest in. On the other side, there are people who have good projects. They are looking for financing, somebody to give them finance to take them to the next level. And I think one of the things doing launch in our social media in Kenya is about a very successful investor now who has created a company called Twiga Funds. He used to work for Coca-Cola Africa. And Coca-Cola Africa, you know, is a big multinational. When he left to start his company, he had a big problem also to find financing. So he had to sell the family house, to do the... But now, it's a long story. He has succeeded a lot. he lost money in the process, but now it's a very, very nice story when you see with the endurance and the perseverance, you can actually succeed. So the thing I can tell to the people who are middle level, who are not able to get financing, let them engage institutions like Kenin Invest, investment promotion agencies, and they say, I'm looking for this size of deal. There are people out there who will be able to give that kind of financing. I think it just requires a proper search and using the right agencies, and then we can be able to overcome the information asymmetry.
And then in terms of the view on investing being more on a negative stance, what's your view on how we flip it to be something more positive rather than something which has got a taint on it from before?
Yeah, that's also a very good question. And I would say, you know, in Kenya and as far as UK is concerned, now because we're in London, I would like to actually say that the UK model has been quite nice. Because they have avoided what is called creating enclaves, where you have a foreign investor who sits in a certain corner, does their own thing alone, and then does not include anybody else at all in the model. UK has avoided that. I'll give you two examples. One is East African Breweries Limited, which is Diageo as a big shareholding. The kind of value chain they have created in our economy. First farmers who are farming barley in Nalok, and now they have built a new factory in Western Kenya near Lake Victoria, and they have started producing beer from sorghum. It is a fantastic story of many farmers who are connected to the value chain. They are able to be given the right seed for barley or sorghum, the proper husbandry teaching. They get inputs on credit, and the money is deducted when they give their supplies. It's a fantastic story because it has empowered the farmers and actually transformed their economic situation. Safaricom, well known in the ICT, Vodafone partnership with the government of Kenya, is the only company that has given two dividends in 1 year, in last year. A normal dividend and a thank you dividend. And they have in their value chain, they have created more than, the last time I checked, more than 500,000 small enterprises, you know, that are selling the airtime, and they are also selling mobile money. So it's those two stories are not the only ones, but they show you that the UK has come up with a model that that is working. And in the seminar, I had another UK company which has followed the same approach in another country, not Kenya.
Not Kenya.
And so, I would like to say, when you go to Kenya, you don't get a lot of negative vibe about foreign investors. In fact, many foreign investors or many Kenyans would die for a job to work for a multinational. Someone because there's a better pay, they get training, they get a lot of exposure. So these are the best jobs that people run out to get. And the fact that these ones are now creating ecosystems, rather than having an enclave, they are able to create SMEs and farmers and include them in the value chain, is really stimulating. And we are looking forward to see if somebody can come and do the same for potato. They are doing that for tea. We like to see that also for coffee, for nuts like macadamia and cashew nuts. Because our people are very productive, but they need a big brother who can be able to coordinate the entire value chain and remove the obstacles that the typical small producers face. Yeah.
What's the first point of call for someone like me from the diaspora or an investor coming into Kenya, don't know anything about Kenya or don't know enough about Kenya? Where do we first go?
Oh, they come to us.
So Kenyan Investment Authority.
Kenyan Investment Authority or Kenyan Invest, we've actually created a true one-stop shop in the sense that we can give the investor like you information about the opportunities we have in Kenya, in different sectors and in different counties of the country.
Yeah.
We will also be telling you the process of investing, depending on your area, what licenses and permits require. Then we have set up a one-stop shop, very modern, in Upper Hill, Nairobi, one of the upmarket areas. So you can come there, and under one roof, you can do everything. Register your company, do tax registration, apply for work permits, apply for utilities. Everything you require, you'll get it at a one-stop shop. If it's not there, our officers are going to hold your hand or even go on your behalf to the agencies that are not in the one-stop shop. So let them start with us. Let them not be cheated by anybody that you can't do a business without paying a bribe. Let them not also waste a lot of time maybe paying for unnecessary consultant fees. We are able to give free government support, at least in the process of establishment. In our website, we are also putting a panel of private sector agencies to support, the private sector, like legal firms, accounting firms, talent search. And we do a due diligence on them, and we sign an MOU with them to treat investors as a king and a queen, because that's our motto. Investor is king or queen. That's how serious it is.
But so are the people.
Yes.
They are kings
Even the people, our people are also investors. This is not only for
100%.
Yeah.
Other delegations like Uganda were keen to discuss the opportunities available in the country, as well as how they differentiate themselves from other nations. Mrs. Sheila Mugienzi, director of the Uganda Investment Authority, spoke to Colorful Radio about how investors, particularly diasporans, can start a Ugandan business even from outside the country.
Okay, this UK-Uganda engagement, I mean, this is all about UK-Africa Summit. Now, we are here to establish what we want out of this summit. And majorly what we want is that for manufacturing firms to come and set up in Uganda. But you see, when they walk around this whole place, they are seeing so many of us with almost the same products to sell, and they're asking, so why Uganda? Yeah. But I've told them that basically there are three things that make us different. One, the cost drivers are coming down in Uganda. It was a bit of a problem. The power was expensive, but now we have a bit more power, so cost drivers are coming down. Effective demand for products is increasing because lifestyles are changing. So there will be market for their products. And thirdly, security of investment. Our country is very secure right now. I mean, if you came to Uganda, I don't know whether you've been to Uganda, you can walk past midnight.
They want to give me the yellow fever injection here. I'm allergic to it. Anyway, but I'm coming.
So there's security of investment, so people can feel secure when they set up their investments in Uganda. And also the fourth one, which is very important as well, is we have a good, vibrant, domestic private sector, which is very important for foreign direct investment, right? Because when they come into the country, they want to find companies that they can supply to, whatever. And we also don't want to attract companies that are coming to suffocate our domestic companies. We want
some
to bring
good work.
Yeah.
Partnership and ownership. So ownership for Ugandans,
yes,
but also working in collaboration with people who are willing to invest and allow that ownership.
Exactly. And we've had so much of that engagement at this table in various sectors, especially energy, agro-processing, what else was of interest for many, infrastructure development, both at government level and private level.
Yes.
Yeah.
In terms of ease of doing business, how does that work? Because I'm speaking for, let's say, returnees or people who, particularly from the diaspora, who want to get involved.
Yes.
When they come in, there's definitely not a red carpet thrown for them at the airport. Where do they
go? But there is a red carpet thrown for them at the Uganda Investment Authority.
Okay.
Because what government has done, it has brought all the entities that one would need to set up business in Uganda all under one roof. So they are at our office. If you want to register, if you want to do whatever license, we have them all together. And we've gone a step further and put them online. So there's an online portal. So
Colorful Radio also had fantastic interactions with its listeners, who were encouraged to participate in the summit by sending in their questions for us to ask the investment authority delegations. Intellectual property protection, advice on partnerships, logistical and operational steps for setting up businesses, as well as which sectors to invest in, were just some of the key discussion points. We spoke to Joseph Kwame from the Ghana delegation, who took the time to answer some of these questions.
I'm with Joseph from the Republic of Ghana, and we want to find out for Hansen, who asked the question around frameworks for people in IT to support their work. And you said you've had similar questions as he has.
Yes. So if I understand his what he's asking, it has to do with the issue of technology counting as equity. Because there are a number of IT firms who, when they want to invest, when they're asked to bring the equity, they want to use the technology they have as equity because they believe it's even of more value than what we are demanding, which is 500,000 if they are wholly foreign, or 200,000 if it's with a Ghanaian partner. Yeah, so it's an issue that's come up. Unfortunately, our law doesn't cover for that. Our law only covers for cash directly and for goods. We do have technology transfer agreements that cover companies who will be transferring technology here.
Yeah.
But for IT as equity, no. Currently, our framework doesn't cover that. But because it's come up so many times, it's something we'll certainly look at. Because the fact is, the IT sector is one of our fast-growing sectors. FinTech is the aim thing now. Across industry, banks... especially, they are keen to, they are now reducing their workforce to an extent and employing more of these IT tools. And it's something we are seeing across board. So these days, IT companies are taking more prominence. When we go on our investment missions, we have a lot of IT private sector players who are doing very, very well. So it's brought to the fore the importance of making life as comfortable as we can for investors of this nature. So it's something we are very much looking at. Management is aware of it, and we are revising our acts, and these are some of the kinks, if you like, that will have to be sorted out.
And what would you say to him in terms of what he needs to do now? What's the best course of action he can do right now?
Oh, the best course of action would be to, of course, come to Ghana and do business, but maybe he can get a Ghanaian partner, give them 10% equity in their business, and that way the equity requirement drops to 200,000, which should make it a bit easier for them to come in.
Okay. And now, speaking from my perspective, what's your view on the current investment that comes in? I don't know about Ghana. I was speaking to Uganda, I was speaking to Kenya. But when investment comes in, how do you ensure that it trickles all the way down to even our lovely people in remote areas or places where people are small, but they actually... employing people as well? What do you do? What's your responsibility?
Well, okay, part of that also comes down to our regulations and requirements for doing business. Certain businesses, like if you want to do trading, aside the high equity of $1 million, you are required to employ 20 people. We give them tax incentives and all kinds of things to ensure that the investment stays here. We're very strict on ensuring that the investment comes in before they start operating. And we encourage certain sectors because that's where those down there, as you described, will feel the impact of their investment. So we don't put any equity requirements on manufacturing, for example, because or agro-processing, that's an industry that, when well-supported, employs a lot of people. So those are some of the things that we're doing.
Do you want to talk about some of the opportunity zones in Ghana right now for people who've never been?
Yeah, so Ghana, right now there's the...
Because we know here for the return,
yes.
It's well known.
Yes, so now we're actually moving to the phase which is beyond the return, whereby we want some of these visitors who came in to now come back and make concrete investments in our country. There are a number of policies that the government is promoting. There's the one district, one factory. All of this, of course, parlays into government's overall policy of a Ghana Beyond Aid. So we are encouraging private sector participation, especially in, as I said earlier, manufacturing, because we believe that industrialization is key for an economy that's growing and one that seeks to improve the lives of its people. It all starts with industrialization, manufacturing, agro-processing, and reducing waste in the system, waste from our farms, ensuring that finished products are made here and exported. There's more premium now on exporting stuff from here than on importing already made goods. So we adjust our policy to favor those who are engaged in some of these businesses. So the opportunities are dominant in manufacturing, agro-processing. We are big on agric exports, trading, agriculture itself. Yeah, those are some of the areas. But of course, the traditional areas that always do well in Ghana, real estate always does well. So you have a lot of people interested in that. And then energy.
Okay.
And of course, oil and gas, as we are still a developing country in the oil and gas sector. So the opportunities actually everywhere in Ghana, every square inch of Ghana.
Which is good.
That's opportunity. So, so I invite people to come.
What's the first point of call if I came in as a returnee or someone from the diaspora who's interested in business in Ghana? Because I can get to the airport, I can come out, and then what do I need to do?
No, the first point of call is you take out your phone, you buy a chip from any of the networks. I don't want to promote any network.
Uh-huh.
And then you open Google Maps, and then you punch in the Ghana Investment Promotion Center. Mm-hmm. You hop in an Uber and get right over there, and you'll be
fine.
That's
if they're open, if I come in on a Sunday.
If you come in on a Sunday, you still go there. You still go there, so you have an idea where it is, and then first thing Monday morning, you come to the office. Or you can get a contact. Yes, you can get a contact on our website. Yeah. You can get a contact on our website, send an email. The GIPC does very well with email correspondence. It's actually even faster than the phone.
Oh, wow.
So you can just send us an email and we'll respond.
Perfect.
The UK-Africa Investment Summit laid the foundations for new partnerships between the UK and African nations based on trade, investment, shared values, and mutual interest. In an official statement by the UK government, billions of pounds of new commercial deals were announced, highlighting the strength of the UK's offer and existing relationship with Africa. The UK also announced new initiatives and funding which will strengthen the joint trading relationship, support African countries in their ambition to transform their economies, launch a major new partnership with the City of London, turbocharge infrastructure financing, and enable Africa's clean energy potential. Taken together, this will help to realize the UK's ambition to be the investment partner of choice for Africa, create hundreds of thousands of jobs, and ensure the mutual prosperity of all our nations. Thank you for listening into this special edition program on Colourful Radio. I'm Desiree Jewel Adam. Colourful.